The Drex Radio Show continues. I'm Mary Liz Cortese, KGO 810.
Tell them to turn on the radio.
Turn on the radio.
Just sit back and enjoy the ride, boys.
Woo! Do you have any idea what time it is?
I love this show.
Me too.
Hit it!
It's showtime.
This is the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
And away we go on the Drex Radio Show, live and local in the Bay and around the world at KGORadio.com. Or it's great on the app. Go to the App Store today and download KGO Radio, and we KGO go wherever you go.
Crop experts in Illinois are reportedly concerned that there will not be a strong enough pumpkin crop to fill the demands of both Halloween and Thanksgiving. But don't worry, your pumpkin spice lattes will be fine because the chemical harvest was plentiful. That's right. Experts are worried there's going to be a bad pumpkin crop, which is incidentally what Donald Trump asked for when he gets his hair cut.
Amen. And by the way, Seth Meyers is not kidding. The pumpkin mania is spreading like a virus with your lattes, this, that, and the other, all things pumpkins. And the pumpkins can't keep up. Most of them come from central Illinois, and it was just too much rain. So, you know, Now is the time to hoard your pumpkin spice.
Hoard your gourd.
For your banana bread, your pumpkin bread, and all of that. Your pumpkin banana bread and your lattes, whatever you're making with pumpkins. All things pumpkin pie. All right. So now you know. And today, what do we have? 23 more days until Halloween. It's Fleet Week now in play in the Bay Area. And 42 more days until you have 42 more days to quit smoking. And I bet our next guest can attest to that it's a very
good
idea.
Knows a thing or two about it.
Right, yeah. Teresa Brown. Teresa Brown, thank you for joining us on the Drex Radio Show.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
She is the author, and it just came out. It's a fantastic book, The Shift, One Nurse, 12 Hours, Four Patients' Lives. And she's been talking about healthcare for a long time. And her book, The Shift, takes a very intimate look at nursing and modern medicine and the state that it's in. And I have to tell you, Teresa, I just went through one of these life-changing events. So thank you for joining me this evening. And when it comes to nurses, I have a lot of things that I'm thinking about, and I'm sure the listening audience who has had any family member who's been in the hospital or needed some caregiving, they are going to enjoy this. They're going to enjoy this conversation. So I thank you.
Oh, well, you are welcome. And now I'm curious to hear what happened, if you don't mind telling everyone.
I had a perforated duodenal, okay, and I also had a perforated bowel, and because everything went septic, I also lost my gallbladder, and that was emergency surgery.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so it was, sign the documents, the whole nine yards.
But when you hear a nurse have that reaction,
right.
Now I know you weren't, making it all up or whatever.
Yeah, and you know, we can start with that question because you gave me the response that I was looking for immediately, and the nurses wouldn't say. So I didn't know how bad it was until I was in my second week of critical care.
Wow.
Yeah, so is that a normal thing? I mean, as a nurse, and I was in intensive care for a couple days, and then I was critical for 2 weeks. And when it is that close, is it because I couldn't get an answer? And I was in shock, and I was on Dilaudid nonstop, and I think I had, the tree of IVs. At one time, I counted 12 or 13 IVs in bags hanging from that thing. Nonstop antibiotics. Yeah. What is the policy as far as patients when they're asking?
That is a great question because there is no policy. It really depends a lot, or almost exclusively, on the physician. What's the physician's attitude? And then how do the nurses feel? But if you get a doctor who says, we're thinking positively, no one needs to hear any bad news, that only makes things worse, it's very hard then for the nurses to give an honest response to a, oh my God, am I going to die question. I mean, of course you would say no, but this is serious because we can get in trouble if we answer like that and the physician has ruled it out. But that also comes up in my book because I have a patient, very similar situation to you, and the physician is very blunt with her about what the risks of the surgery are. And then the patient's sister feels like that was wrong to give the really scary statistics and that the doctor shouldn't have done that. And then I talk about it and say, well, I see her point, but then I personally feel like it's important to tell people what they're facing, but there is no rule.
Yeah, you know, and that's very interesting that you said that, because doctors make rounds, but the nurses are constantly there. You are the constant caregiver. And you would change shifts, but they're long shifts. They're 12-hour shifts, right?
Yeah.
So it's very monotonous and very tedious. And I was curious, it's very interesting. The name of your book is Four Patients' Lives. So the shift, one nurse, 12 hours, four patients' lives. And so is that the standard number of patients that most hospitals have for?
No, it really depends on the floor. So as you saw in the ICU, it was probably two nurses to every patient.
Right. Yeah, it was nonstop there, yes.
Right, yeah. On my floor, bone marrow transplant, because the patients are so sick, it was four. There are a lot of floors, though, where the ratios are much higher. As a student, I worked on a floor where all the nurses had eight patients. And I've heard nurses talk to me about the book and say, four patients, oh, my God, I would have, you know, given my arm to help me have four patients. I always had 10 or 12. So
wow, that's a lot. And I've heard
yeah.
some conversations that you've had with other people around the country. And you said that three would be ideal, right? But five, six is really pushing it.
Yeah, three would be perfect. Five is doable but tough, and six would be close to impossible.
So where do we stand with major medical corporations, and let's go there too, with Obamacare, because, you know, I with my basic care doctor where I came from before, is very honest with me because I've been with him so many years. Well, Drex, welcome to Medical Care 2015. You know, where does the corporate world lie with all of this? Do you think it's going in the right direction, the wrong direction?
I definitely think we're going in the wrong direction. The corporate world is all about, let's make money. And not only let's make money, but let's make as much money as we can. And unfortunately, that often means cutting back on nurses, because nurses don't earn money for hospitals the way physicians do. Nurses just cost money. And so it's very easy for people in accounting to look at costs and say, wow, look at this huge labor cost. Can't we cut back on our nurses? Which is a mistake, because patients really can suffer. They really can suffer. There's data now that shows us that. So I would say we need to focus less on profits. It's fine to make money, but you don't need to make more and more and more money. And put that attention onto our patients.
And who should intervene? How do we know? I mean, we take for granted. I certainly did, and thank God things worked out. I went to the right place. But yeah, I mean, what can we do as individuals to figure that out? Is it something just as, thank God I had my will and my trust in order if things would have went the other way. But is this something that we should all figure out ahead of time? We should figure out what hospital do we go to? How do we handle this?
Well, if you can, there are quality dashboards, and of course, word of mouth will tell you a lot. But in a situation like yours, I'm guessing it was an emergency, right?
It was, but I had done my homework previously because I had to be in network just to find a regular, you know, a doctor, my internist. Yeah,
right.
I just got here in January. So, you know, I was doing that research beforehand. But thank God. I mean, honestly, we did go to the right. We went to the in-network hospital. Yeah. So,
right. But in an emergency, you don't have a choice.
No,
if
I didn't take an ambulance.
First or
right.
whatever, you don't have time to be Googling, oh, which hospital is going to be the best for this? You just need to get there and have someone operate on you.
And I guess that's unnerving to some people listening, because they don't know what they're going to get. Are they going to end up in one of these corporate places where you are a nurse like you are, who's doing a 12-hour shift, and you're attending to six, seven, eight, you know, patients?
Right.
You're not getting
and
the quality care.
I wish I had a really good answer for you. I mean, having a great nurse who has the time to look out for you will make a huge difference, but people can't always have that. So if you can have someone there who can be persistent, who can make sure their questions get answered, who can make sure that they understand what's going on, because like you were in a position where you couldn't have spoken up for yourself, even if you wanted to, I'm guessing.
Now, my significant other, God bless her, yeah, she stepped in there. So incredible debt of gratitude. Well,
she probably likes you too.
Yes.
She wanted to keep you around.
We're together.
I'd have taken the money. Kidding.
I'm going to take a break, but we're going to continue the conversation with Teresa Brown. She is the author of The Shift: One Nurse, 12 Hours, Four Patients' Lives. I have to tell you, it's fantastic. And she also lectures nationally on issues related to nursing, healthcare, and end of life. So if you have any questions, we have people lining up now. You want to comment about nurses, or you have questions about any of these things that I'm discussing, hospice or healthcare, end of life, 808-0810 is the number, 808-0810. We'll continue with this great conversation because I don't want to make it all about my mess, but we will continue in just a minute on KGO 810.
Come join us for the third annual Bacon and Brew Festival at San Mateo Central Park this Saturday, October 10th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. It's an afternoon for the whole family. Live music, local food vendors, breweries, and unique artisan crafts. Come sample delectable bacon dishes. Bring your lawn chair and your appetite. It's San Mateo's Bacon and Brew this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Presented by the San Mateo Chamber of Commerce and Nash FM.
Radio show on KGO 810.
I have to tell you, nursing does need more participant observers, just like Teresa Brown. And she is the author of The Shift: One Nurse, 12 Hours, Four Patients' Lives. And she talks about nursing, healthcare, and end of life. And if you have any questions, 808-0810 or comments, and we've got lots of them. Thank you for joining us, Teresa. I have to ask you, one of the things that I noticed while I was in intensive care, even though they were pumping Dilaudid into me as fast as possible, and by the way, that is, I just want to say about nurses, one thing I did discover from and the multitude of nurses that were caring for me was the constant maintenance of pain medication. And I can't say enough about that, because the last thing you want to do is be in pain. And they were constantly asking me, what is my pain level? And they would keep pumping it in. So I thank you. Thank them.
Yeah. Well, that is one of the most important jobs we do.
Right. It really is. And those nurses, I don't know. I mean, you guys don't get any heat about keeping people out of pain, do you? I mean, it's not one of those things where anybody cares about the drugs going out, or, you know.
Very occasionally you'll get an intern or a resident. So they're the new doctors, and they obviously got some lecture about not over-medicating people for pain and watch out for addicts, and they'll be pretty stingy, and that can be challenging to have to work with them and have them realize that with what you went through, of course, you need a lot of pain medication. People with cancer have tons of pain. They need pain medication. So sometimes you have to work with people. But in general, if it's a really serious problem, there'll be an understanding that, yeah, we need to treat that pain. And now we know that pain doesn't just hurt, but it's bad for people. It makes it take longer for you to heal. It elevates your blood pressure. It means you release all kinds of stress hormones, which do other nasty things to you. So we need to control pain so that people can not just feel good, but feel better and get well.
And again, thank God for nurses. And let me ask you another go-to question. When I was in the intensive care there, I experienced death. It was around me. And even though I was heavily sedated, I couldn't help but feel affected, even though I perhaps might have been next. How do you keep your emotions in check?
Well, I think we get trained to do that. We sort of learn, you get on the job and you put on your game face and you make it through the day, and it's just sort of putting on the uniform is that ability to hold things in, although I don't think it's super healthy.
Right.
I think it would be better if,
yes,
you know, we could talk a little bit more about what happens. And what actually helps me the most if I'm feeling sad about a patient or about deaths that we've had is talking with other nurses, because they really understand.
Now more of the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
Kelly Walden will be our guest at the top of the hour. And whoa, this is going to be dreamy. It's going to be a dreamy 9 o'clock hour, which is perfect for the late night, late show wrap up. We'll analyze your dreams a little bit. We'll hit it for sure. Right now, we are chatting with Teresa Brown. She's the author of The Shift: One Nurse, 12 Hours, Four Patients' Lives. And everybody sooner or later does hurt. You know, you don't know when your number's up, and when your number is called, what are you going to do? You're going to call NurseBusters, and they are there to save you. Thank God. Yeah. I can't tell you. After what I went through, I am so grateful all the way around. I was wondering if you could tell us a best story and perhaps a worst night story.
A best night story and a worst night story?
Yeah, or best story, patient story from your book, or, you know, I mean, something that's very positive, and then some things that something that you think is really ugly in the medical field, the industry.
Yeah, well, a great story is there's a patient who's sort of a peripheral character in the shift, but he's just come back to the hospital with a relapse of leukemia, and this character ended up becoming a friend, he and his wife. So his name's Ray. In the book, his real name is Doug Weaver, and he and his wife, Kaylee Pierce, are thanked in the acknowledgments. He is a great story because Doug is a firefighter, a father, a tattooed punk rocker, and he came in with bad leukemia and this amazing attitude of what will be, and things turned out great for him, and he's even back to fighting fires.
Oh, that's so fantastic, yeah.
That's as good as it gets,
That is great, and speaking of good, we'll get to the bad in a second, but, you know, I'm curious because I did want to befriend several of the nurses, and I thought, you know, and I even asked one of them, and they said the whole HIPAA thing. Because I got recognized, and everybody asked you, hey, what do you do, this, that, and the other? And, HIPAA came up, and they said, you know, because they wanted to take a picture or something, and then they were like, oh, no, we can't do that.
You're like, Nurse Jackson, are you on Snapchat? And they're get away from me.
Yeah, right. So I'm sure you run into that all the time, and I even heard you talk about tipping. People want to tip, and what do you suggest?
It is hard to make friends with nurses, and also you don't want to pull the nurse into sort of becoming your unofficial, unpaid caregiver, right? Because that's not good for you or for the nurse. Sometimes it does just work out that way, and this was one of these instances. So I was lucky because Doug is a great guy, and now I get to keep up with how he's doing. But I think it's tough, and probably because you're known, it makes it even harder, because if anyone talks about you, everyone's going to know right away.
But I'm just saying, any patient listening, you know, USA, if at the end of your hospital stay, is it okay? Or if you're taking care of somebody in my family or my spouse, can I give you a Starbucks card? Is that ethical or something like that?
A Starbucks card is a lovely gift for any nurse.
Okay, that's what I was going to get at. All right, let's take a call here because we have Mary on the line here. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's go to Carolyn. Carolyn in Gilroy. Carolyn, you're on the Drex Radio Show on KGO with Teresa Brown.
Hey, Drex, I'm so glad you lived.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, and hey, Teresa, I share your same last name.
Oh.
You're a hell of a nurse. I can tell just by listening to you. I didn't take care of myself, and I burned. I burned to a crisp. I had to leave my job before I wanted to. And you so are telling it like it is. Mm-hmm. I want to thank you for writing the book. I have not read it yet, but I so look forward to reading it.
So, Carolyn, you were in nursing, you're saying?
Oh, more than 30 years, yes.
Oh, well, thank you for those 30.
In the operating room. And the last 4 years that I worked, I had the boss from hell.
And was that a doctor or was that an administrator?
Administrator nurse.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's talk about burnout. Thank you very much, and God bless you. I appreciate it. Let me see, Carolyn. Okay. What about burnout? I'm sure it's a big element. I mean, people live, they die, and then there's the administrators and the corporations and the doctors.
Yeah, it's a huge problem in nursing, and people in nursing talk about it a lot. My sense is we could fix a lot of it if we weren't counting our pennies and were instead counting our nurses and making sure that we always had enough. Because the biggest issue in burnout is feeling like you don't have control over your environment. And in healthcare, you're never going to have control over your environment. That's a lot of what I wanted to get across in the shift. But your workload, whether you're supported by your bosses, you know, whether people will help you out if you really need it. All that stuff can be controlled, and most of it comes down to having enough staff.
Yes, and staff cutting, you talk about that, and I guess that's, as we talk about, and we were suggesting, you know, what is the worst thing about that, the industry? Somebody earlier asked, and they couldn't hold on, could you address, somebody mentioned, well, I was in a hospital, it was dirty, but the nurses were saying, well, you know, they cut staffing, and that's one of the things they cut back on, and she wanted me to address that to you. So what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, that happens. They'll decide to cut housekeepers. And in fact, I think it was Vanderbilt University a little while ago cut their housekeepers and then said that the nurses were going to do the cleaning. And there was such an outrage on social media that they reversed it. But it's kind of this idea that these ancillary people aren't important or nurses can just do their job. So in my hospital at one point, to save money, they hired the transporters, people who take patients to and from tests and procedures. And the idea was then, well, if we don't have enough transporters, the nurses can just do it. Well, then what about your patients on the floor who need you? I mean, it's just so completely ridiculous and short-sighted and dangerous.
Yeah, house of cards.
Indeed. And one other thing that's ugly that I wanted to ask you about, because it ran through my mind, nurses who are constantly in there and having to be around all things influenza and superbugs. That's got to be scary. And we go back a year ago today, and Ebola was a word in our vocabulary that was front and forward. I mean, God, I can't imagine dealing with these sort of things.
Yeah, it is scary, but we have protocols. We have rules. That's part of the problem with Ebola is that the protocols the CDC released initially just weren't good enough, were kind of ridiculous. And once they got the correct protocols established, then everyone was safer. But, yeah, we definitely worry about that, and especially if you have a patient with HIV or hepatitis C, you know, you've got to be extra, extra careful.
Teresa Brown for Surgeon General. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. I think you're fantastic. And her book is The Shift, One Nurse, 12 Hours, Four Patients' Lives. And if you can't remember because you're driving, keep your hands on the wheel and check it out at KGORadio.com. All right. Thank you, Teresa Brown, and stay in touch. It's lovely to chat with you.
Thanks, and I'm glad you're healthy.
Thank you. Yeah, I've got a hernia I've got to take care of, an incisional hernia. So, but one more round, and then
that's small
I'll be done.
Potatoes
that's
compared
it.
To everything
yeah.
else.
Right.
Very good.
Thank you. Have a good night and rest
bye-bye.
Of the week. All right, let's take a break, and we will begin the late night late show wrap up with our next guest. What does that dream mean? All of Heather's naked dreaming. I fly. I'm not a very good flyer in my dreams. Do you ever fly in your dreams?
No, I never have had that dream.
Wow. You don't fly?
I have the
it's
dead the strange, air dream.
Oh, well, we'll talk about that. That's an anxiety dream. Yeah, that's a big one.
That radio people have, yeah.
Kelly Walden will be our guest coming up next hour on KGOA 10.